For the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to take a turn into the world of science. But instead of its discoveries and cures and laboratory projects, we'd like to look at the big picture, the overarching issues that shape how we do science in this country, how we determine what we study and what we don't, and how effectively we do it. Among those issues, science education, immigration, science funding, and of course the intersection between politics and science and how that affects research and outcomes. Joining us in the studio to tackle the big picture is William Press. He's head of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and he's in Boston through the weekend for the AAAS conference, which is expected to bring close to 6,500 scientists from around the world to the city. Dr. Press, welcome to the studio.
Thanks.
And I want to start with a very simple but also gigantic question, which is just, in your view, is the state of science healthy as we head into this new year?
I think the state of the union of science, if we want to put it that way, this morning, it's essential and it's threatened. And let me say what I mean there. Science is essential because the big issues, the big public policy issues, the ones that the president raised last night, all involve science in a deep way. We have global climate change. We have energy independence from foreign sources. We have renewable energies. We have science education. And more generally, in education, we have the question of how are we going to educate a citizenry for a high technology age that we find ourselves in. So those are all issues which are going to inspire the enterprise of doing science for the benefit of society. At the same time, if the sequester kicks in, science is genuinely threatened. The sequester would automatically cut $54 billion from the federal R&D budget over the next 5 years. And this is on top of the fact that U.S. research and development has lost 10% in real dollars just in the last 3 years. It hasn't kept up with inflation. So the president certainly understands this and put it very well in his talk last night when he said, now is not the time to gut job-creating investments in science and in innovation. He called for reaching a level of research and development aggregate in the whole country, including both federal and industry investment, that hasn't been seen since the days of the space race. Clearly, he believes that science is on the investment part of the ledger that's going to help the economy, not on the pure expense part of the ledger that's just something that we have to afford.
You mentioned several big issues that came up last night. Why don't we start with one of the biggest and most contentious, which is climate change? You know, the president has vowed that it will be a second-term priority. In his State of the Union last night, he reiterated this finding that 12 of the hottest years on record have come in the last 15 years. But there is a new head of the House Committee on Science who's raised concern, Texas Republican Lamar Smith, who has been skeptical of whether humans play a role in climate change or how significant that role is. How do you see Lamar Smith and his new political position affecting the scientific landscape when it comes to climate change?
Lamar Smith happens to be my congressman. I live in Austin, Texas, and I'm in his district. And I think there are many issues on which Chairman Smith is a big supporter of science. But as you point out, climate and climate change is simply not one of those issues. The president, in his talk last night, called for people to recognize the overwhelming judgment of science on this issue. I think the dynamic that's changing is we're coming to see that climate change is not some abstract thing of will the whole globe warm by a couple of degrees over the next 50 years. We're coming to see that climate change is talking about preparedness for possible disasters that are coming. They're local and regional disasters, the hurricanes, the storms, the wildfires in the West. I think that the skeptical public more and more is simply going to see the evidence in front of them, not in terms of some subtle global measurement, but in terms of some potential disaster, actual disaster, or perhaps near miss that's right in front of them in their town, in their city.
But the debate does continue, and we have the president on one side. We have people like Lamar Smith on the other. That leaves scientists in the middle, scientists who study climate change. Do you feel like they're getting the support they need to continue their research without outside interference?
Yeah, I think I don't think there's that much of a problem there. I think that in terms of the of translating that research into public policy, that's where the problems arise. But it's hard to imagine people on either side of the political aisle that don't want the country to be prepared for big storms or prepared for wildfires. The way the climate scientists say this is there are two sides to what we need to do. One is mitigation. Mitigation is trying to minimize the future effects of climate change by actions we can take now, most notably, of course, reducing our carbon emissions. But there's also adaptation, which is essentially preparedness. And it's preparedness for things that we want to be prepared for, whether or not you believe that climate change is caused by human effects.
Another place where science intersects with politics is immigration. And as you know, many companies complain that there's a shortage of visas for highly skilled immigrants working in science and technology. And a bill was recently introduced in the Senate that would free up green cards for people in science and technology. So a two-part question for you. The first part is, how important do you think it is to bring in these kind of skilled science workers? And then how do you think that influx could affect science and innovation?
I think it's very important. I think we've always been a nation of immigrants across the board, and the form that that's taking today is that our high-tech industries rely on high-tech immigration. Again, that's an issue which spans both sides of the political aisle. You happen to have mentioned Lamar Smith. Lamar Smith is very pro on high-tech immigration. The question is how to do it from his perspective, how to do it in a way that doesn't lose him his right-wing Republican base. From the president's progressive agenda point of view, it's a question of how to do it as part of a comprehensive immigration reform, which is, of course, what the Democratic base would like to see. There's not disagreement that it should be done. I think there's simply disagreement on the political mechanism of how to do it. I was an author of a report by PCAS, the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology, that brought up, again, something that many people have suggested. We ought to have a way of, in effect, stapling a green card to every PhD diploma that comes out of an American university.
We're talking with William Press, the head of the American Academy for the Advancement of Science. We'll continue with him after break, talking about, among other things, failures in science funding and why we don't have more studies on gun control and gun violence, because that's an area where politics and science very much come together. There's more ahead here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're here in our studio with William Press, head of the American Academy for the Advancement of Science. He's in Boston for the organization's annual meeting, which runs through this weekend. And Dr. Press, we were talking before the break about the demand, especially among technology companies, for more visas for skilled immigrants in science and technology. But there are many American workers who say there are plenty of us here skilled in the sciences. We may need some retraining, but if you're willing to invest in retraining, we're ready to be hired. I'm wondering what you think about that argument.
Yeah, I think it's not a zero-sum game. It's not a pie of a given size that we're trying to divide. If we can increase the amount of industry here by bringing in talent from abroad, that benefits everybody. That creates more industry that also hires more Americans. You're absolutely right that training and K-12 science education and undergraduate science education, science and engineering education is a part of this to create the people for the jobs and the jobs for the people.
One of the arguments for bringing in these skilled overseas workers is that science education in our own country is falling short. And there does seem to be general agreement that at best, American science education is uneven. At worst, it's deficient. How would you size up K-12 science education today?
I think there's a lot of work to be done. We're not training a new generation that's going to step in and be the scientists, engineers, technicians, technologists of the future. This is very high on the president's agenda. Again, PCAS, the President's Council of Advisors, has written a couple of reports on science education, one on K through 12. Another important point is even when we have kids who go into science as in their first years in college, the dropout rate where they move to other college majors is huge. So we're not keeping them interested in science.
Last night in his State of the Union, the president talked about a new challenge to redesign U.S. high schools to better equip graduates for the demands of a high-tech economy. What would the dream high school classroom and the dream high school science curriculum look like to you?
I think there are a couple of different tracks there. I think in his talk last night, the president was talking both around finding the very best, the very brightest we have and putting them into an educational track that'll take them through college, through graduate school, make them the scientists and engineers of the future. It's also simply a fact that U.S. industry needs more people with high school educations that include some technical training. We're attracting manufacturing back, finally, to the United States. But if you go to a factory floor nowadays, you don't see a lot of workers doing assembly line work, dull, repetitive work. You see workers who have had a good deal of technical training. They're running robots. They're programming computers. They're doing things like that. We should be training for those kinds of jobs in high school.
You mentioned earlier the incredible hit that science research funding could take if the sequester goes through. And, you know, we've read so much about how broken many people believe the science funding system is, that some university faculty members spend up to 40% of their time trying to get grants rather than do science, that because they are less likely to get the grants they're applying for, they have to scramble to apply for even more of them. And also, very interestingly, we came across an article that says grant money tends to go to safer research that might not have groundbreaking impact instead of risky projects that can have monumental impact. How would you size up the state of science funding?
The two big science agencies that fund basic science are the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes for Health. And both of those have been criticized, and I think it's justifiable criticism for funding science that's in a kind of a zone where it's incremental rather than revolutionary, where it is funding well-defined projects rather than funding people and teams who are able to think creatively, and where it tends to be more disciplinary than interdisciplinary. Now, these agencies understand that they're a little bit in a rut on this, and they make efforts to try to move out. A number of reports and a number of outside committees that have looked at this have tried to egg these agencies on and simply say, take more initiatives that are interdisciplinary, that are people-based, based on past records of achievement, and that are more revolutionary than evolutionary, even though there is more risk that the project simply won't work out.
One research area where there is a freeze on research is gun violence. And many people don't think of gun violence as a science issue, but in fact, many scientists believe there is a connection. For people who don't know, tell us a bit about that freeze and what you would like to see happen.
Yeah, well, the freeze occurred in the previous administration. And there has simply been a period where we haven't been doing the research we need to do on what are the causes and what are the potential strategies for preventing gun violence. Representative Ed Markey from Massachusetts, of course, and Representative Maloney from New York have a long list of co-signers who have proposed a Firearm Safety and Public Health Research Act, which would end the freeze and fund new research on the causes of gun violence. The AAAS strongly supports this research.
So much of what we're talking about gets at how intertwined science and politics can be. I mean, whether it's energy policies or global warming or research funding or science education or visas, all of these. So given how often politics plays a role in all of this, I'm wondering if you think that scientists have to learn to become more political. They have to be more political, whether you can't just do your work and try to tune out the politics around you, or whether you need new political skills to survive in this climate.
I think, by and large, we want scientists to do science. Now, there are different kinds of science. There's basic and fundamental science, where we really want scientists to follow their instinct for fundamental discovery. At the same time, I wouldn't call it political, I would call it more entrepreneurial. We want scientists in all fields to be able to recognize, I have this great idea, and if it works out, not only will I learn something new about fundamental biology or how the universe works, but there's also this piece of it that may be applicable to something. Our best research universities, the MITs, the Stanfords, and so on, Harvard, are recognizing this and are making sure that in the training of scientists, they get some exposure to not just what does science look like, but what does entrepreneurship look like? What are the paths between basic science and creating new jobs, creating new industries?
We've been talking with William Press. He's the head of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, which has its annual meeting in Boston this weekend. So you're here for the weekend. We appreciate that you came into the studio. Thank you very much for making this trip.
Thank you for having me.
And then tomorrow on Here and Now, columnist Michelle Singletary talks to us about finances because, yes, on Valentine's Day, she says it's critical that partners communicate about their finances. That's tomorrow, and news is next, Here and Now.